If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Yeah, that it is. And how about starting off your Monday with a fine story about stabbing? This is one that we talked about last week. It's horrific. It makes you want to crawl in a hole and just have no hope for humanity. Talking about Chad Dorman, he's the 32-year-old who planned to kill his three sons, execution style, in the front yard. And then was arrested by police. Well, he's now entered a plea. So we're going to talk about that behind the merciless execution of his three young sons. The small, usually peaceful county jolted to its core last week when the heartbreaking news of these three young boys, 7, 4, and 3, reached them. The familial sanctuary on Laurel Lindale Road sounds like a fairly safe place down on Laurel Lindale. Just take a right there. It's nice. You picture flowers and all. It was transformed into a grisly crime scene on June 15th, with the first responders being summoned to the location at 4 p.m. following reports of a shooting. It was there on the cusp of the verdant lawns and white picket fences that encapsulated the charm of suburban life that the unthinkable unfolded. Upon arrival, the deputies discovered a scene that could only be described as a heart-rending tragedy. Outside the home were four individuals, all victim gunshot wounds. Life-saving measures were attempted on the three young boys. These are his own sons, 3, 4, and 7.
Beautiful kids, too.
Oh, my God. Those are some of, like, the best years, too. Where... if you have kids or if you have nieces or nephews or anything, you know those years. And it's like, gosh, those are fun. I mean, there's headaches with anything. But like these were just, they're innocent. They're just, they're kids and they love you. As long as you're a good parent, they love you no matter what. It's like you are like God to them. And it's so fun and you can do so many things and they're exploring the world. And how the hell someone gets it in their mind, oh, yeah, let's kill my... There's no explanation other than someone who is literally insane.
It has to be absolute dark evil, doesn't it?
It's dark evil. It's a brain that is not working correctly. If you go into the mind of these people and you start diving deeper and deeper and deeper and you look at other cases, you can start to see just how badly a brain can malfunction. Sometimes there's just not a whole lot of explanation. There's no reasoning this or making it right. And I'm always trying to find why someone does what they do. How did this father get to this place? Because if we can figure some of that out, maybe we can stop other people who are going down those paths. I'm reading a really interesting book right now, actually recommended to me by one of our regular guest, Robin Dreeke, former FBI and head of the behavioral intelligence program with the FBI. His friend, who was on his team in the FBI, Chris Mahondi, wrote a book called Evil Thoughts. And it's extremely fascinating. I've been listening to it all week on Audible. And it really goes into the mindset of various killers and different situations, whether it be stalking, whether it be a familial homicide or things of that nature, and recounts trying to get into the brains of these people, hence the behavioral analysis program of the FBI, and trying to figure out how did this person get here and how can we get in front of other ones? And that's what I think really drives a lot of my interest in this.
Do you think you can get in front of that? Do you think, I mean, some people are eccentric and weird and some people are stressed out.
Yeah.
So how do you look at somebody and go, oh shit, there's warning signs here.
And that's the big thing, because a majority of people who do display signs of a personality disorder or a mental disorder do not harm other people. They truly don't. But there are certain ones who do. So basically the thing is, what is the difference? Because I'm not saying every person who has a personality disorder or a mental disorder needs to be locked away. In no way, shape, or form am I saying that. But I'm sure some dumbass out there will just take little bits and pieces and go, well, that's what he's saying. It's not. Mm-hmm. But it's recognizing the disorders to begin with, number one. Okay, there's a disorder here. There's something that's not going right. What are the signs? What are the breadcrumbs that some of these people leave that they end up then doing horrible, horrible things to other people? That the people who have the other disorders as well, that they don't leave. What's the difference here? If we can identify some of those specific breadcrumbs and those very specific signs, maybe we can get in front of this. The crazy thing is, when you think about this and you learn about it, this is all new in terms of intelligence and understanding. The behavioral analysis program, Mindhunter, saying somebody is a serial killer, or how we identify someone as a borderline or a psychopath or a sociopath or this or that, this is all in like the last 60 years. This has not been around very long. We are on the very beginning in terms of time understanding this level of human intelligence and human thinking and behavior. So
data points now too. We have all of these serial killers. We have all of these people that we have studied, hopefully.
Yeah.
You know, and taken a look at them and gone, you know, they all seem to have this one or two or three very specific traits that we keep seeing over and over and over again.
And that's what I think is interesting about what we're doing, because I don't know that we're gonna change anything right now by any means. I mean, I hope to God we can at some point, but I hope the documentation of these cases, the way that we do it, the way other podcasts do it, where people can look back at some of these cases in a way that they never could in the past and see it in real time and hear it day by day as people are going through things and trying to understand things and hopefully 100 years down the road, somebody's going to listen to this and kind of try to hopefully grasp more of this and maybe sooner find ways of getting in front of people like this. That's the ultimate goal, because the obvious isn't always there.
No. And the scary thing is how many people are sitting and listening to these podcasts and they're starting to learn some of the different personality traits that you've talked about, your experts have talked about. And then they turn and look at the dinner table and go, wow.
Oh my God. I wish I would know half of what I know now from doing these shows.
Yeah.
3 years ago, even like 4 years ago, 5 years ago, when I was in an abusive relationship and I was the one that was being abused. And just to have that voice or somebody saying, look, this is not normal. You don't have to keep sitting here going, it's okay. It's something where just having an outside voice, I think, is very helpful. The boy's mother, going back to the story, who also fell victim to the bullets, was found outside the home nursing a non-life-threatening gunshot wound to her hand. She was quickly transported to the University of Cincinnati Medical Center. Her physical injuries not as severe as the emotional trauma inflicted upon her. Claremont County Sheriff's Robert Leahy met the bereaved mother at the hospital, where he was tasked with the dreadful responsibility of breaking the news of the fact that her sons, all three of them, were dead. One ray of hope emerged amidst the catastrophe. The boy's older sister, Alexis, managed to evade the brutal violence, and she was safe in the house. She's the one who also called 911. The scene was secured by deputies who apprehended the man, later identified as Chad Dorman, who was sitting on the step outside the residence. Subsequently, he was taken into custody without resistance and escorted to the Claremont County Sheriff's Office. Claremont County Prosecutor Mark Tuklev, during Dorman's arraignment, shed light on the chilling details, describing the incident as a planned slaughter. He unveiled a narrative of a home-turned-hunting ground where a father-turned-predator chased down his own child, who fled from the terrifying scene, only to be gunned down from behind. Even more distressing was the account of the youngest child, a 3-year-old boy, being forcibly taken from his mother's arms before meeting the same fate as his brothers.
Oh, my God.
It was a premise supported by the gruesome evidence presented that Tuklev made a plea to the judge for Dorman to be held without bail, which was subsequently granted, thank God. A pretrial hearing is set for July 5th at 11 a.m., and we'll, of course, have that for you right here. Chilling revelations surfaced during the first hearing on June 16th, where David Gass, the chief prosecutor, underscored the harrowing circumstances of the crime. It was revealed that the desperate mother was shot in her hand while attempting to wrestle the weapon away from Dorman in a futile bid to protect her children. Court documents revealed that Dorman had confessed to planning and executing the heinous crime for several months. Dorman, who now faces 21 counts in this indictment, include 9 counts of aggravated murder, 8 counts of kidnapping, 4 counts of felonious assault, could face the death penalty. Thank God.
Yeah.
This is one of those things where, I mean, I think it's good to be able to try and learn and understand what made this person do this. Nothing logical, that's for sure. But what is it? Because other people do these sort of things. And then once we kind of get that data, kill them. Quite honestly, just rid them of the planet. He's already admitted to doing it. He's already admitted to planning it. There is no need to go through any more process here other than maybe some observation. Let's learn about this a little bit more. Let's try and get in his head as much as we can. And once we think everything we need, boom, we're sorry, firing squad, you're done. But
see, I would do that differently, Tony. I would do a lethal injection.
They keep having issues. They can't seem to get the recipe right. And that's where Idaho actually just, and this didn't take place in Idaho, I don't believe. But Idaho just recently changed their law saying that if we can't find the cocktail to kill you in the lethal injection, we're just going to shoot you by a firing squad.
Honestly, here's what I don't understand. We euthanize animals every single day. The cocktail that's used, it's called euthasol, and it stops the heart from beating.
Then why can't we start
about
using,
2 to 3 seconds?
If this was used on people in a higher dose, would it not work? Like, why is there? I do not understand. Like, why there's this thing of like it's really hard to find the ingredients. It's not like this is shit. Like you're looking for at Walgreens. So like all the Walgreens are sold out. Like, no, I think you can figure this out. I think we can figure out how to manufacture this shit. I mean, if that doesn't work, give him a big cup of Drano and say, have fun. There's plenty of shit that I could look at in my house that would kill me pretty quick. Why is it that the criminal justice system, when it comes to death row, can't seem to figure out something to inject in somebody that actually kills them? Why is this such a burden?
My theory is this, is that it is not approved by the FDA. It's a veterinary drug. Therefore, it can't be used on people, even though the ultimate reason you would be using it is to kill them. So it doesn't matter if it's hygienic or if it's approved by the FDA. If your goal is to kill them, and we know that this will, because this is toxic. This goes against everything that a living creature would want in its body. It absolutely shuts everything down. We know it works. It works on animals. And the reason we know it works is because as veterinary professionals, we have to make sure that we aren't getting a finger stick, a needle stick,
which
from
can kill
it
you.
When we've used it, because it's dangerous.
I'm going to imagine in the course of veterinary medicine, there's been a vet that's died by accidentally getting a needle stick at some
point. Well, here's the thing. Part of the reason that veterinary suicides are so prevalent is because they have at their disposal the medication with which to do it. So a lot of veterinarians who commit suicide, and it's one of the highest professions that commit suicide, it's because they have this drug right at their fingertips.
So they use it.
Yes.
No shit.
Yes.
I had no idea.
Yeah. And so it's a controlled substance, and typically you need two people to be able to pull that medication out of the lockbox. Like, you need two codes to get it out.
Sure.
Because one person with a code could be doing something nefarious with
it. Yeah, yeah. Wow. Well, I had no idea. Well,
so, I mean, it depends. It could be, you know, a small farm vet who doesn't have that lockbox with the two codes.
Yeah.
But it's a big deal. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, he's, of course, pleading not guilty, and likely it's to try and get a lesser sentence or some bullshit. Really, at the end of the day, actually, if you plead guilty, you might actually get the lesser sentence, not necessarily pleading not guilty at this point. But he's not the smartest cookie. And this is certainly a life that is not precious. And the sooner it can be extinguished, the better off this planet will be. So we will continue to follow this. We'll bring you that that hearing that will take place on July 5th as it happens. Right here on the Hidden Killers podcast.
You're locked into the Hidden Killers podcast.
Want more? Start binging on all of our true crime podcasts right now through Apple Podcasts and get an ad-free experience when you sign up to be a True Crime Today Premium Plus member exclusively on Apple Podcasts.
More of the Hidden Killers podcast dropping soon.
Press subscribe now.